And there she is. Hi, guys. You can call me Peggy Lipton from the Mod Squad. I just had an eye procedure, and I
love the glasses.
I don't really see anything. I know. And funny enough, they match my sweater. That wasn't planned. But for those of you who don't know me, my name is Lisa Smith, not Peggy Lipton, and I'm the Chief Program Officer here. And welcome to our Clinical Services Net group. And today we have joining us, of course, Dr. Elaine Rotenberg, who is our fearless chair. And we have, I guess we're going to have a good discussion in line
so.
For you.
I think
and
so.
If there's,
I said, I think so. I hope so.
If there's anyone new, I think there's a few new people that are on this call. When I looked at it yesterday, raise your hand if you're new to this call. Anyone? Oh, Mimi. Hi.
Hi, Mimi again.
Welcome. And welcome back. And Astrid, welcome.
Can we, Lisa, I would love it if we could, hi, Michael, if we could just put where people are.
Yes, if everyone can just right click, that would be fabulous.
Hi, Suzanne, good to see you.
And if you can put your camera on, that's even better. Elaine, do you want to take it away?
I do. I want to take it. Is that okay, Lisa? So when we were, first of all, hello to everybody. And so many of you are new, which is great to see new people joining us. Let's see. Oops. Okay, Mimi, you are allowed to take your child to school. Okay, that's a problem. People here, you're allowed to eat if you're hungry. Self-care, we really believe in that. It's a good thing. So there are so many new people on this call, which is my inclination is to like walk around and like say hello and see who everybody is and we work. So I think what we'll do is both. So I'm going to kind of kick off a discussion here. And if you would take, you know, like a second when you guys are going to respond, this is like a very interactive kind of meeting here where we kind of learn from each other, but just make sure you kind of say hello, let us all know where you're from and everything like that. So we talk about different things in this net group. And one of the things that I know has been on our mind in West Palm Beach and and we have a pretty large counseling program there. We have about 12 or more licensed psychologists, social workers, and 3 psychiatrists. And we regularly, and especially post sort of in this pandemic world that we're still kind of in, obviously are looking at things like related to our revenue and looking at fees and looking at what we're doing to, you know, charge fees, collect money. We had a situation where we were getting really good when people were coming in paying for services. And then we had 3 years of pandemic and oops, what a surprise. We realized that, you know, we all learned how to do telehealth, but we kind of slipped in terms of like really learning how to collect fees up front, you know, when you're doing telehealth. So that was like a little problem that we're working like to sort of correct right now. And so a lot of times in this meeting, we will like talk about different content and clinical issues and things like that. But I sort of had this feeling when Lisa and I were talking that it might be great to have just an open discussion of where we are with fees, what we do about sliding fees, what do we do about hardship? Do we give our services away? Do we charge for our services? How do you determine hardship? Do we, of course not, but we like to create surpluses in our counseling programs. Do any of us even actually have surpluses? And then how firm are, if we have these policies, if we have like the set policies of you've got to bring in your bank statement, you've got to bring in that, do we do that? If somebody won't, how firm are we with that? So I've got some thoughts about some stuff that I know that we're trying out now, but I would love to sort of not do that right now. And my colleague Iris is here, who is our behavioral health director. Hi, Iris. Hi, everybody. But I'd love to just stop talking now and open it up and let you guys kind of talk about it a little bit. Astrid, you look like you want to talk, but we can't hear you.
Oh, you can't.
Can you
hear me? I saw you demute. Okay, go. That's good.
Can you hear me though? No?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So sorry. So my name's Astrid. I'm one of the therapists at Jewish Family Service in San Antonio. And then I also am helping with the psychiatry department. So we are under new management and we're reevaluating our policy. So it was really great to see this meeting today. And so that we were able to join. So myself and Amanda and Selena are from the JFS in San Antonio.
Oh, interesting.
So just wanted to give you a little background and why we're here. I guess I'll let somebody else.
So what do you have to say about what she has? How are you guys doing? What are you changing?
Well, she just wants to learn from us. We want to learn from you.
So we're reevaluating things. So we don't ask for documentation when it comes to what your monthly income. So we're like, do we start asking for those kind of things up front? You know, do we send invoices weekly? Do we send them monthly? We're just having some growing pains, especially during the pandemic, because it was all virtual. So we didn't know till on the back end later that like people hadn't paid for a while. So we're trying to
a universal problem.
Yeah. So we're trying to figure out like what's the best policy and what everybody else is doing, because we don't want to be like very strict, because we are wanting to provide services. But we also want to make sure we can keep the doors open and pay our clinicians. So it's that kind of balance that we're looking for and seeing what other struggles people are having, what they found has worked and what hasn't worked.
Thank you.
And
other people.
I'll jump in, Selena from JFS San Antonio too as well. And so some of the things that we're trying to do is we're starting to send invoices, you know, as Astrid had mentioned, and we're trying, and it's a delicate balance, right? We don't want to discontinue service because people aren't paying, but we also want to see some movement on their end, you know, and encouraging them to call our front desk is who's handling the billing and the invoicing, right? And at least make that initial step to start paying off some of these balances, because some of these balances are really huge. And for the clients getting these invoices, it's like, whoa, right? And so we're trying to, you know, like just start making that, encouraging them to make that contact so that we can see that they're trying to attempt to make, to pay off some of these invoices. But like Astrid said, it wasn't until more recently that we're like, okay, you know what? There's a lot of money sitting out there. We're not getting paid for our services. It's impacting our agency's financial status. But yeah, we really want to see what other people are doing and how they're navigating this new experience for agencies.
Okay.
So good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christina. I'm the clinical director for JFCS in Philly. Ongoing issue for us as well. We have started, what we found our clinicians was asking for is a policy set up specifically around payment, non-payment, and our expectations around that, because it felt very challenging for them to have these conversations with clients without the backing from our agency to say kind of like, this is our policy. This isn't just coming from me as your therapist. And so that policy has been really helpful for us to then go back to clients and say, hey, you guys signed this. You were aware that this was kind of the expectation from the get-go. How can we work with you, whether it's to set up a payment plan? Can you make any kind of payment at this point? I think the challenge is we certainly have some clients who are perhaps in periods of crises where, you know, or their financial stress is the reason they're in therapy. Mm-hmm. It's one of their primary reasons for their depression and anxiety. And so then saying to them, by the way, you have a $350 balance. And certainly we know that if they were in private practice, you know, or any kind of practice, they need to pay in order to continue to receive services.
Christina, can you say more about your policy?
So it is,
and or share it and read it to us.
I would love to say that I could find it quickly, but the chances of that happening are probably slim to none, but I can certainly share it with the group after. Maybe I can forward it to Lisa. And
can Lisa, you tell us a little bit about it then?
Yeah. So, you know, it's both a cancellation and a non-payment policy. So, you know, that was the other piece of this, is that we were having clients who cancel within the last, you know, within 24 hours. And so what we basically said, that if there is a cancellation within less than 24 hours, they will be charged their copay, whatever the fee agreement was. It is up to the clinician's discretion if for some reason there was an emergency. You know, we obviously don't do that. But if it was a no-show or I didn't really feel like coming to counseling today, they'll be charged their fee. The non-payment piece, my understanding is when the balance reaches a certain threshold. So say, for example, it's $25 or actually, you know what, if somebody else wants to talk for a minute, I can try to find that. But I actually have a question as well. Card on file.
Hold on 1 second. This is nothing to do with it. But Iris,
that's a great question.
Iris, I made you a co-host so you can let people in because I can't see the screen to do so. When someone comes in, can you let them in?
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. We actually do not. We send invoices. This has all been post-pandemic issues too, because payments used to be collected at the time of appointments.
Right. You know? So let me pull this, like, several key pieces that Christina's talking about that I'd love us to get some, just even internally, kind of our own sort of best practice of what we're doing here. Okay. So the first issue you brought up was the 24 hour. Do most of you do that? We do that also. They sign if they don't pay. If they cancel in less than 24 hours, yes, it's at the therapist's discretion if it's like an emergency, but other than that, they do get charged their copay. That is our policy. So that was one thing we just talked about. But the other thing is the non-payment. So you started to say there's the non-payment. If it gets to a certain point, do people refuse services? Do we tell people they can't come in anymore? What is our policy about that? Do we have policies about that? And I am interested in the card on file issue. Maybe I'll start with that one first. How many of you require cards on, like, credit cards on file to bill for counseling? Emma, you do. Hi, Emma. How does that work in Austin, Texas?
Well, when we moved to telehealth, it was important for us to keep up with the billing. And so we are...
Well, the rest of us didn't think that was important, Emma.
And it was, you know, what can we do to strategize for that? And not to say that we didn't have our own hiccups or plenty of large balances after the last couple of years that we've had to deal with, whether it was because insurance didn't pay what they said they would, or whatever those situations ended up being. But our EHR, which we're switching from, does allow us to save cards on file. And so our way of operating is to, you know, get that as we onboard a client and have it on file, and then we charge the day after, and our billing person goes through and does all, you know, so that the clinicians have enough time to say show or no show. And same with the cancellation policy in terms of, you know, we have 24 hours, we need notice. Be email, phone, whatever. Yes. And then there's some discretion from the...
I know, Lisa. And Emma, if that person, and then Michael's next. And then Emma, if that person says, no thanks, I don't prefer to have a card on file, or I don't have a credit card, or
so
my mom told me never to give anybody my credit card on file.
So we haven't run into that too much, I will say that we did update our financial policy this year as well. And so we're billing, invoicing monthly for anything that was missed. And that way we can kind of keep up on a regular basis with collecting fees. So if there is someone who is uncomfortable leaving their card on file, they will be invoiced monthly instead, and given another way to pay us. But that doesn't come up often. Most people want us to take their card and put it on file. At the beginning of the pandemic, at the end of my sessions, clients would sit there and read off the number of their card, and I would enter it into our Stripe system that we had before we had a way to integrate it. And I hated doing it. They hated doing it. It was after every session. So they were like, can't you just hold my card? So that's something I hope that we'll continue. And I'm happy to share our updated language around the financial policy and our—
That would be really helpful if you could send that.
Yeah, I pulled it from my daughter's OT office, actually, because I liked the way they were doing it. And
any
so
chance
I just—
you could put that in the chat or email it to—
Yeah.
Are you keeping the cards in your EHR system? I don't know if I missed that.
We use Simple Practice right now, which, like I was saying, we're upgrading from that because we've outgrown it. So we're going to have to find a new approach to this, I imagine, because from what I understand, most of the EHR systems don't want to hold cards on file, but they'll integrate the client portal with PayPal or Stripe or something like that, so that there is still that ease for the client end, their user end side.
Okay, so I know Michael—
Can you email that to me as well? I'll put it in the resource library.
That would be great. And Lisa, can you tell everybody again? And Michael wants to speak. And Michael, what are the rules? The rules are, you know, we'll try to call on you when you raise your hand, but feel free to jump in. And Lisa, can you please— you mentioned we have some new people here. Can you tell them again how to get into the resource library?
Yep.
Okay.
But Michael, I can't now. I'll email you because I can't type anything right now. Okay. I can't.
Michael, welcome. Thank you for being so polite.
Trisha, maybe you can.
I'm new here. I'm trying to figure out how are things done. Hello, everyone. My name is Michael. I'm the Director of Counseling and Mental Health at Jewish Family Services in Ottawa, Ontario. We have a pretty big counseling unit. We have 35 counselors, registered psychotherapists, registered social workers, and registered psychologists. We offer the services on a sliding scale. We have very few issues of non-payment. We do not require clients to put the credit cards on the system. We do have we do use a system, a database called OWL. Not sure I would recommend it to large practices, but for small practices, I would recommend it. And it does allow to have the credit card in it. We're looking to change it right now, by the way. We outgrew it as well. We ask people, and people are agree to put the credit cards on it. It's not a requirement. People can also pay by bank transfer or by PayPal, but most people prefer to pay by credit card. And then the moment they are done with the session, all the counselor needs to do is to attend the session. And then the next day, reception or the person responsible would charge the credit card for the client. It's just a click of a button, and it's very simple in that way. We do have every once in a while clients that do not pay. Our policy is that if within 3 sessions you do not pay, you're not eligible for additional services until you make that pay. This is sometimes it doesn't happen, and we need to make sure that we work closely with the counselors to oversee that.
Michael, what does that mean? Can you be like really concrete for— if within 3 sessions they don't pay, what does that mean? So they came in today and they did not— today they didn't pay. Yeah. And then next week they didn't pay.
We would not book a follow-up session until you paid your debt, your three sessions.
If you missed 2, you wouldn't book the 3rd session.
No, the 4th.
Okay.
We wouldn't book the 4th. The one thing that we try to do, and this is what we've learned the hard way, the counselors are having a harder time to actually deal with the money with the clients. This is whenever there's an involvement between the client and the counselor around money, there's difficulties. So we try to take the responsibility away from the counselors. So we have our intake unit that does that together with reception. When the client calls in at the beginning and we do the intake assessment and the matching, we will agree with them on a fee. This is also something that goes into our regulatory bodies and the way that they ask us to deal with those kind of issues. They would deal that with that. They would have the client sign the contract, which also includes all the agreements around what do you do when how do we charge you about no shows or late late coming to a session, and then the only time when the counselor would actually have a conversation with the client is that if there's a need to reassess the fees. So a client comes and says, I can't make it anymore. Like I can't pay the money that was agreed. Then they will have a quick conversation, but they will refer them back to intake to have the assessment for the fees. The assessment for the fees, and then the other piece would be if they haven't paid for three sessions, the counselors will tell them, listen, I can't book a fourth session before you pay your fees, what you owe us. And we try to avoid going over three sessions, like it was said here, because otherwise it's way too much for clients to pay. Whether they pay $5 or $100, it becomes a lot of money for people to pay. Sorry, there were a lot of other things that people had mentioned here that we do have some solutions for that seem to work well for us and others that don't. I'd be happy to answer questions.
You mentioned an assessment that they send them back to the intake to determine the fees if they can't afford what was agreed upon. What does that assessment involve?
So that's a great question. So we, our biggest difficulty, I think, is administration and paperwork. I'm trying to remove as much admin work from the staff as possible. And so the intake assessment at the beginning would create, they will do a conversation of about 20 minutes with a client at the intake, trying to understand what are the issues and trying to understand more about the client. And then only at the end of this conversation, they would ask around, they would have a conversation around the fee. We've created a table that we use that takes into account the number of dependent people that the person has and then their household income. We do not ask for proof. So getting those proofs this is the paperwork that causes too much of a trouble. There's an honor system. I'm sure that some people use it to their advantage, but others do not. Like we've had situations where people would said, okay, you'll pay $30. And they would say, no, that's too little. I'll pay more. There is a discretion for the intake worker to reduce it a little bit if there's a need. But if they find out that they can do it, they will take it to the manager and the manager will make the changes. It's a pretty big subsidy factory. So last year we subsidized 70% of our sessions to a certain extent. At the beginning cost was $30 per session.
So Michael, I just really want to stick on that with you for a couple of minutes. Is that so you... because we also have our intake department who is going to be establishing and does establish the fees, including the sliding scale. And I know they've actually just been working on, which I know Iris has, she can share like a new form in terms of with all those different questions, you know, dependents, number in the household, things like that. And then we have a sliding scale. My question is, and I'm curious what other people have to say about this as well. Michael is saying he asks those questions and doesn't get any hard verification. It's basically the honor system. So is there anybody here that's actually asking for a bank statement, your return tax form, is anybody asking for any real proof of income?
Pittsburgh.
Okay, I want to hear whoever is what you're asking.
Yeah, it's handled through our fiscal department, though. It's separate from our counseling department, and there is an established income guideline. There's no requirement in terms of family size or anything, just flat income, but fiscal does ask for a proof of income.
And how do you know how they get that?
I guess it's either through tax forms or, pay stubs, something like that. But they do ask for verification of income. And that's what we base the per session fee on.
And that's done by your fiscal department?
Fiscal department, yeah.
We do the same. We have actually a subsidized fee application that the client needs to fill.
Who's speaking? I can't see who's speaking.
Oh, Sandra. I'm Sandra Novak with JCFS Winnipeg.
Hi, Sandra. I couldn't see. Thanks.
Okay.
So go ahead. You were saying.
Yes, we have a subsidized fee application form that the client needs to fill out. And we ask for a copy of whether it's a pay stub, whether it's the tax return, whether it's the notice of assessment. And then we also leave a space to write if there is any additional information that might keep them from paying the sliding fees that is based on that, on the assessment. So they write there, and then the assessment is chosen, the fee is chosen. And if the person has an issue paying the fee, we do the same as Michael mentioned, the three sessions. If they don't pay the three sessions, we don't book the fourth. But we will talk about if it's because of the financial situation and not being able to pay, we will reassess. What happens is the therapist will reassess and we will get it approved by the supervisor. We don't approve it ourselves. So the supervisor approves the change. Regarding whether those sessions that they missed are gonna be paid or not, that also depends on what are the reasons that we need to reassess. So it could be discretionary, I think is the word. Yeah.
So Sandra, who is it that's asking for that verification?
The office.
Exceptions.
What?
I think you were saying there can be exceptions, right?
Is that no. But I mean, who was asking for it? Was the intake?
Well,
the
it's intake part of the intake package. Now we don't really have intake workers. Each of us is on intake on different days, but the person that the admin person that sends the packages, it's part of the package. So the person that assesses it when we have the package back is the supervisor.
Gotcha. So who else here is asking people for verification, to actually show you verification? Rebecca, where are you from?
Southern New Jersey, Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Excuse me, Rebecca just won the woman of the year.
Not that big.
Well, we are honored for you to be in this net group.
It was a big deal. What was it?
Okay, Rebecca, we are proud to know you. And so what do you do about collecting verification from people?
We keep asking. Oftentimes it leads to many phone calls, and sometimes it leads to clients not getting the service because they don't provide us what we're asking for. But if they want to waive their insurance or they don't have insurance and there's reason to utilize a sliding scale fee, we have a grid that shows based on annual income what that session fee would be. That all fees are based upon gross pre-deductions, household income. We ask that they must provide us either a tax return or pay stubs and bank statements in order to qualify. And again,
tax return and what else?
Tax return or pay stubs and bank statements. So if they provide us a tax return, that's all we ask for. If they can't or won't provide us a tax return, then we ask for pay stubs and bank statements. Typically, it's 2 months in a row if we're talking bank statements. We are not so strict. If they provide us some of these items and the story adds up, if you will, then it's usually okay. But oftentimes we get information that things just don't make sense. So we need to sort of understand the picture.
And Rebecca, do you do that for anybody who is wanting any kind of a sliding scale off of your full fee?
We do that for counseling, yes. And we also have the same for case management.
And your full fee of counseling is how much?
The full fee is $175 for the initial and $125 for subsequent appointments.
And so if somebody says, no, I can't afford the $175, even from that point on, you will get verification.
If they provide it to us at the start, at this point, I do not know that we are asking them for resubmission a year later. We should. If they start and they provide us proof and they should meet qualifications, let's say for a $35 session fee, which that is income up to $30,000 a year, that it constitutes a $35 session fee, that would remain their session fee during the length of service here at this point.
So you don't have an annual renewal process yet?
We don't yet, but that might be an idea.
Right. Because it's interesting. Okay, so that sounds like anybody even you know wants below sliding anything below your full fee. So Michael asked a question. He said, we find that asking clients of low means for verification creates additional barriers to service because many of them don't have their taxes in order. Thoughts? Looks like we're getting a tougher group here, Lisa. People are really, I'm glad to bring this topic up because I think it's helpful to hear that people are actually doing this. Like the days of just saying, you know, come in, we'll right. just be happy to see you.
I want to say that when I worked at JFS of Greenwich, we started to do it annually because our therapists were saying, you know, these clients can pay more than $30. You know, they're going out to dinners, they're doing this, they're going on vacation. You know, it's time to bring it up. And we ended up raising a lot of people's initial sliding scale because yeah. they could afford more. And the therapists knew it. So they couldn't finagle and say they didn't have the money. So
yeah. I just think to that point, there's something about valuing our services higher that is important for our clients to understand from us, as an agency, that we're dedicated to providing you high quality services. And that means that the price of those services will match that in some ways. And of course, there's the flexibility that we're talking about, but we used to slide down below $5, which I think someone just asked in the chat, and we really don't do that anymore. I found that wasn't quite enough to keep clients feeling like they had skin in the game.
So I want to answer that as well. We used to also, people would say, you know, they can't afford it, and we didn't have verification. But based on their word, they can't afford it. So we would slide the fee down to our minimum fee at the time, which was like 35 or 40. Well, it's interesting because not sliding now has really led us to pursue various fundraising asks and allocation asks from the Federation. So for example, we have this new program called LINCS, because everybody's so invested in case management for over 55 and over 65. And we talked to our Federation and said, look, there are all these younger families and they can't afford counseling. They can't afford our fees. And so we have certain pots of money that we can use to cover the cost of counseling, for example. And in those cases with verification of income, we would go less than, they could pay nothing, but we know that amount that was predetermined with Federation, I think it was below what we charge, but I think it was $80 or $85 for counseling or something would be covered by that LINCS pot of money. So I think it's a fundraising opportunity for us as well. What's happening in Chicago, Roseanne?
You can't get away without speaking.
No, because I haven't seen you in a long time. So I want to know whether you set limits, whether you collect things, whether you acquire documents.
Well, they still have the wait list, I bet, right?
Actually, we have absorbed our wait list. We are fully staffed, which is absolutely a miracle. What a relief. Yeah. As of the beginning of September, we have a full team of therapists. I was down 3 therapists for a long time.
I remember.
So we have to clarify, because I think most of the other providers serve everyone through the lifespan. I only work with seniors. And the majority of our seniors have Medicare, Medicaid, a Medicare Advantage plan or a supplement. So we may, we don't have to struggle so much with the sliding fee scale because we've really got, generally got Medicare as a baseline. We also have this wonderful grant from the state, this Title 20 grant that removes all obstacles to treatment, including financial obstacles. So I can serve up to 50 people a year who are in financial need, who can't afford their insurance copayment or co-insurance, who have a lousy Medicare Advantage plan. So I have this amazing option to move people into that plan. That said, I do have people who don't pay bills, who agree to pay bills. But I will tell you, I'm very active as the program manager in staying on top of that. I work really closely with our finance department, and I will reach out to people and negotiate the fees and figure out what the pay structure is. I'm also the person at the beginning of therapy who talks to them about what to anticipate in out-of-pocket expenses and can negotiate up front if someone can't afford their co-insurance costs.
Interesting.
Can I ask a question as a follow-up to that? I'm curious how many of you have a designated person who has these conversations with clients, or are they just conversations with the therapists? Because I think that's what we're finding is that our agency does not have a, we have somebody who handles the invoices and the billing, but in terms of the conversations, whether it's trying to collect, you know, overdue balances, having conversations regarding the fee, all of that is done with the therapist. And that's that's a challenge for sure. It sets up a wonky dynamic. So I'm curious how other agencies are handling that.
I know it at our agency in West Palm Beach, we do have a billing team and they reach out to the clients and try to collect. However, if they're unable to reach the client and they're not getting called back or there are things that are kind of limiting that, we do then have the therapist, because they always show up for their sessions because clearly their bills keep getting higher. Right. So that may be our only means of contact with the client. So then we do involve the therapist at that point to kind of close the circle and help to get the connection and make that contact.
But Roseanne's model is different, right? You don't have anything to do with the client except the beginning, and you deal with the billing department. I like that. And you're the program manager. Mm-hmm. And you supervise, I guess, all your staff. That's an interesting model.
What are other people doing in terms of, very curious about this, you know, verification. It sounds like, were there other people that were requiring, how many of you are not requiring any kind of proof of income?
Wow.
Is that like the majority? I'm trying to get a sense of that.
Half. I think it's half.
Does this conversation make you want to change your mind on that? Oh, yes, it does.
Laura.
Laura says no. Speak up, Laura. Laura, you're in Portland.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. So I am the child and family therapist here at JFCS in Portland, Oregon. And we're doing sort of a pilot with my position. So all the other therapists who work primarily with adults and older adults, bill insurance and Medicare, I am doing straight fee-for-service sliding scale. And it's been, so I want to say two things. Number one, I think there's a misnomer and a misconception, this may be in other communities as well, that number one, Jewish Federation completely you know, supports us and that they pay all of our salaries and that we don't have to worry about
billing. No, we know they don't. We
right.
get
we know they don't, right.
We know they don't.
And that because of that, there's this sort of misconception that, you know, in the Jewish community that only like the poor people come to us. And so only the people who are going to come for free services. So to Emma's point earlier about, you know, really recognizing that our services have value. We were kind of curious to see if people would still come, especially within the Jewish community, and pay. Our top end is 175. And interestingly enough, I would say on my caseload, I have about half of my clients whose families pay the full fee. I do not ask for any information other than you tell me what your gross annual income is and how many members are in your household. And then from that, we determine based on the sliding fee scale what the per session rate is. I'm totally honest with people. I hate talking about the money. Like, it's the most least clinical, most uncomfortable thing. If I was in private practice, that would be one thing, but I am not. And so it just feels kind of, at least to me, sort of a little icky to have to kind of talk about that, but I do it and we get past it. And then, somebody else manages kind of like, are they paying? Are they not paying? Whatever. But I think what's been kind of interesting is that given the huge gap in service and you know, just getting your kid in to see anybody at this point is so impossible, that we have a lot of parents that, you know, I tell them, look, if you want to start with me and we'll see how it goes. And if you want to get on a waiting list somewhere else and you can get in and use your insurance, great.
So yeah. For you, which is very interesting, because we've actually just started to do that with one of our psychologists specifically for psych testing, just took her mm-hmm. off all the insurance panels except mm-hmm. for Medicare and are going to go straight private pay. What is it that you charge those families if they want to see you?
So our top end is $175.
And what's the lowest that they can see you at?
$25. So far, that's what we've gone with. And nobody has needed to, at least nobody's said to me, oh, I can't even pay that. We do have a couple people who, you know, have Medicaid. And so we've really tried to adjust based on what they would like, either pay as a copay or whatever. The other thing that I do offer people upfront is that, you know, we will provide a super bill, which itemizes all of, you know, the services that we've provided at each month, and that they can then submit that to their insurance company. And if we know they're not going to be reimbursed at the highest rate, because clearly we're not an in-network provider, but that they might be able to get something back. And so far, I would say I've had two families come back and say, yeah, we can't afford what you're asking us to pay. And so we're going to look somewhere else. But other than that, the rest of the Jewish community has really been willing to pay, like I said, up to $175. So anyway, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. Gotcha. I do not personally want to ask for tax statements. I'm glad that other agencies do that, and good for you. I would feel incredibly uncomfortable with that, especially this is a very small Jewish community. I'm in the community, and it just feels uncomfortable since we don't have like a full.
That's a whole nother story. Yeah. Living and working in the Jewish community or in the community, you know.
Absolutely.
But we didn't hear for another time.
We didn't hear from Natalie. What's happening in Miami?
So we actually do ask for proof of income, and we started doing that fairly recently. We do have some people that have some issues returning the documentation since it's a fairly new process.
What do you require?
So tax return, pay stubs, anything like that.
What's your lowest and what's your highest?
$150 is the highest, and then $25 is the lowest. And we've had some people, you know, say that they can't afford $25, and we can work with that with them to, you know, lower that as well.
But they have to start showing documentation,
right?
For any type of below this hardship. $175, any type of hardship.
Right. Yeah. So we'll work on them. You know, and again, it's a case by case basis. We're human, and that's why we're in the fields. But we want to you know, be good stewards of what, you know, we have. So we want to make sure that we're being wise with the resources and making sure that, you know, we're not doing it forever, that we're kind of holding the client accountable and not doing it, you know, for an extended period of time, that we're holding the client, that we're, you know, if they're saying that they're looking for a job, that we're, you know, if they're, you know, for 3 months, 6 months, and then we'll reassess at that point, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, do you require, do you keep cards on file?
So some clients, for the most part, clients will have their cards on file. Some clients don't want to, but that's the minority, from my understanding, at least.
Gotcha.
I wonder if anyone's counseling department is making money, is profitable. Yeah,
not so much. But
I'd love to hear if they are.
If we have more of these conversations, maybe we will. Hey, Dr. Jessica, you raised your hand. What's happening with you? Where did you go? Where are you from?
We can't hear you, Jessica. She's at JCS too, actually.
Oh, you're part of our Tri-County, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have a Tri-County mental health money that we got from the state of Florida.
Yeah.
To provide mental health services. Yay for us.
Yeah.
So what are you doing down there? Jessica had her hand up.
Oh, we can't hear you, Jessica.
Still can't hear you.
I think this is just going to type out.
We'll get back to who we didn't hear from. Who, Debbie, we didn't hear from you in Lehigh. Anything you want to add? No questions?
This has been a fascinating discussion. Thank you, everyone, for sharing. We have a very small counseling department. We are looking to expand it because we feel there's need. I mean, our system is, we also, like some of you, do a lot of older adults, and we have Medicare and supplements. So that's a big portion. I mean, we tend to be fairly flexible in terms of our giving scholarships, and then we do have grantors who provide also money for scholarships. So I'd say the one thing that has been a great development is we got this program and we've got a person now who really likes to do billing. And we are making more money than we ever made before. And the program is called Careo. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it.
What's it called? It's a
very user-friendly program where I can just, if I see somebody, I just type it in. And it's really, she has for a small counseling department, I think with maybe 30 clients, we've taken in like over $40,000. So for us, that's big. We're a very small JFS.
Debbie, put whatever you just said in the chat so people
know what you're saying. I love this, and I'm not a big fan of these.
But what is it? I didn't understand what you said it was, the Careo.
Careo, it's billing software.
Oh, it's a billing software.
Billing software.
Thank you. Iris, you wanted to share something.
No, I just wanted to say that in West Palm, we are shifting and trying to start to get a little bit more information from people and not just setting fees based on kind of what they're sharing with us. And so we created a form. So we're not always going to be collecting official documentation, but we're going to request that they fill out information and attest that the information that they're sharing with us is accurate. And then if we have additional questions based on that information, we may ask for additional documentation, but we may not, depending. And then, you know, and then we compare it to our sliding scale or any grants that we have available. And one of the things that we've done in terms of trying to separate the cost is we created two sliding fee scales. And one is for our licensed clinicians that starts at 150 and goes down to a certain level. And then one is for, we have a growing trainee program with interns and practicum students. And so we have a separate sliding fee schedule for the unlicensed clinicians that goes lower and potentially can go down much lower even than what our lowest fee is, because they don't, you know, we're not paying most of them. So we're trying to kind of implement that actually right now as part of our process.
The attesting thing is interesting. So I guess we're not going to require the documentation for everybody. But make
not for everybody. So for example, we haven't even finalized the form, but I started kind of testing and sending it out. And we sent it out to like two or three people, and a couple we've gotten back, and the information kind of made sense. So we matched it to our sliding fee scale. But then one, it said that there was zero income and zero everything, but that they were living off their savings. And so we're going to request to see kind of a bank statement to just match it up, because there was nothing on the form. So in that case, you know, just to kind of have some supplemental documentation, but no, I don't think we're going to require it for every single person. But I think in terms of part of our rationale is that with some of these grants, they require certain, the grantors, the people who are giving us the money, want to know, how are you determining who's eligible for this? And so this documentation will help us to provide that information to say, this is why we deemed these individuals eligible to receive that subsidy.
You want to share that documentation as well?
Sure.
Which also asked
Elaine, I wanted to say there's someone, Emily, Oopsie, oh. Abraham. Oh, right now.
You can send that, Iris, if you want.
Oh, send it. Okay.
So, Emily, Abraham, I don't know. I can't see, but you are new, and it's a new organization, JQ International, to NJHSA. Welcome. Is this conversation helpful to you in the work that you all do?
I think it's helpful for where
no one knows. Explain what JQI is.
Oh, too. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So JQ International is an organization that serves the LGBTQ plus Jewish community. Mostly we're based out of Los Angeles, so a lot of our work is based here, but we have national support groups and we have an international helpline. So I also personally am a therapist and do private practice, but I think this is helpful for where we're moving towards. Right now, our mental health work is mostly in forms of education, support groups, and helpline case management. But I think this is super helpful because in a few years we would, or ideally even sooner, we would love to be able to be offering therapy services and counseling as well. So this is like great to know from the get-go. So I really appreciate everyone sharing.
Yeah, I just want to say, and I know this has been a lively discussion. I think I hope this has been helpful to people. I think one of the things I found helpful in knowing like kind of where we are as an agency is I think it was very affirming to hear that I think we've all moved further than I would say we were 20 years ago. Like people, we're not scared right now to say, yeah. And I want us all to hear from each other that yes, we should support each other in figuring out how to get verification, how to still be clinically sensitive to our clients, but be able to, you know, have our services valued. Iris, I like the, I wasn't involved in developing it, but I really like this attestation form as an option, because you want to share that with Lisa too. That's a way, it's a little, in some ways it's softer, but if you put your name on something and say, I'm telling you that the information I'm telling you is true and certain, I'm verifying that, you know, that's right. A pretty powerful thing for people to do.
Well, our application, it's one and the same. So our application is the attestation form. Like gotcha. They fill in the application, but they are also in the same process attesting that the information is true.
To mm-hmm. me, that's scarier than giving a false piece of document to put your name on something. So I like that you guys came up with that. I think that this has been, for me, a good conversation. I hope it's been helpful for you. We haven't done a lot of these, Lisa, but I'm feeling like coming out of 100% in person. And I don't want to say we're past the pandemic, but we're certainly at least in a virtual world. And I think needing to do some catching up in terms of our policies and procedures and various things that may have had to slip during the pandemic, this is important. I'm curious, just a quick show of hands, because as I think about topics for the future, is it, and this just may be a couple of you have told me about this, is there any interest in discussing or getting recommendations of various EHRs that people use? Or Lisa, do we have a list? Or
yeah, we do. We have a list, and I can send it to you.
People are nodding their heads.
I have a list of whoever sent it to me, because people have asked for that before, and when they have, I've collected it. But okay, not everybody has filled it out.
Can we somehow, like, it doesn't need to be our next talk, but uh-huh. can we somehow generate that list again or send that out again in terms of EHRs? Is that something people are interested in wanting to know, like which EHRs people use that they?
So I can send out a request for you to respond to me, and then I can put it into the database, and then
that'd
I can,
I don't want to give you more work. I mean,
I just wanted to say, I know we don't have much time. I wrote in there 1/26 of next year at 1 p.m. is our next group, but remember, many of you have seen it. We are having our PowerNet in Dallas, May 7th to the 9th, which is our annual conference. And if anyone's interested in sending in something that they've done, that's innovated, that's worked, you know, a clinical program, you know, please do submit your work. We want to learn from you. And this year we're doing something different. We are, whoever gets accepted will also be given a training on how to make your PowerPoints fantastic, how to do presentations, et cetera. So, you know, we're giving you a gift of those kinds of public speaking skills, which I really would like to take as well. But there you go. I hope that some of you might come and might present. So there you go.
So good seeing everybody. Great conversation.
Great seeing everyone. Happy holidays. Happy Thanksgiving. And we'll see you next year, if not before. Don't be strangers. Send your forms to me, okay? And I'll put them in our resource library.
Bye, everybody.
Okay. Bye, everyone. Elaine, are you just stay on for a minute? I can't even see what time it is. Oops. Let me